All right, and welcome to the Rondo. We're back, back again. It's the Rondo, man. Come on, come on, come on. All right. Well, it's not too much in the party today, actually. So you got your boy
Tower hosting. Race only.
Yeah, Tower Race
Tower
only.
Contenders. Tower Race, bro.
Cheers to you, my guy. So you got your boy here, and you got. Tell us something, man.
Yeah, Jalen, man, representing Arsenal. You know what I mean. Outside this year, man.
Come on, come on. Serious guy. All right, on today's podcast, we're going to discuss a couple of things. So we're going to start off with the title race, funnily enough. Everyone seems to have gone into hiding, so I suppose we should start with that. So Liverpool are now the league leaders. You know, some people surprised by that. Some people always saw it coming. But yeah, we're going to talk about Liverpool being the league leaders and whether it's down to the quality of them as an overall team, or it's down to the quality of a few individuals. Then we're going to talk about Arsenal, who have obviously slipped this weekend, and going to talk on whether they have a victim mentality. Then we're going to talk about Villa and just how good they are, because they're in great form at the moment. Are they in the title race? Emery seems to believe so. So, you know, let's talk. And we're going to then do some spotlights on Emery and the dance hall, Iron Robin. And then that's Leon Bailey. And then we're gonna then just do a few little bits on United and Chelsea, and then finish off talking a little bit about the Spurs and Newcastle games. And we're gonna work in the Rondo. So lots and lots of stuff, lots and lots of stuff. But let's start off with Liverpool.
Been waiting for this.
Yeah, thing, man, I've been waiting, man. The new league leaders. I don't know if we've been top of the league yet this season. I feel like this might be the first time. Obviously top of the league now. So I guess that begs the question as to, well, the first one, we'll go for the one that we have on the agenda. Do you believe Liverpool are top of the table due to their quality overall as a team? Or do you think it's down to individual brilliance sort of pulling them through? It's been a question that's been asked this weekend because of our performance against Palace and performance in recent times.
It's a mix, because when I thought about it, you know, in the past, you could say individual brilliance, but I think when you have so many individuals that, you know, you could attribute that individual brilliance to, you can't really dismiss them as a collective, you know, if that makes sense. You look at, obviously, the best goalkeeper in the world right now, Alisson, you know, obviously Van Dijk is up there in his position. Mm-hmm. Salah's probably, you know, one of the best wingers in the world, if not the best. So when you've got, you know, a good number of those, more than, you know, two or three or whatever it is, you should always be in a good position. I mean, that's the reason last season why people were so disappointed that Klopp couldn't make the top four, you know, because even with all the problems that you have, if you have players of that quality, you should be able to get to, you know, a minimum a top four. So I don't think it comes as too much of a surprise. I think at this point in the season, you know, you would expect a club like Liverpool to be in and around it, regardless of whether there's players missing.
Yeah.
It's now about, you know, whether they can sustain it and what you guys do in January, but always going to be a threat.
Okay, yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I, like I said from the start of the season, I always said that we will be involved in the title race. People dismissed me. People said it wasn't possible.
I was not one of those
guys. You weren't, to be fair. A lot of Arsenal fans dismissed me. United fans were telling me that they'll be better than us this season. we're right amongst the mix. I mean, nobody can deny that we're in the title race now. And you know what? Yeah, when I think about, I hear your point about a collective, and I think it's true. When we've got so many, you can't, you know, dismiss us as a collective. But when I think about, in the same breath, I don't know, because I get why people say that maybe they're not convinced that we can win it, because I'm not convinced personally that we can win it, because I just don't feel like. I feel like Arsenal and Man City are more of a team. And I feel like they're, I don't want to say better coached to, you know, kind of, you know, sort of disrespect Klopp there, but their coaching is more balanced. They seem like a more balanced outfit than we see in Liverpool. I do feel like Liverpool at the moment are pulling through due to some of the individual brilliance that we have amongst the pitch. And, you know, a lot of that is down to Klopp. But at the end of the day, I do think that is, you know, something that really does has to be considered. Because you think about, remember we were talking earlier, right? You think about the fact that we've conceded the same amount of goals as as Arsenal this season. And as a defensive structure, we have not looked as good as Arsenal this season. What's the reason for that? Alisson. I think you brought out the stat as, you know, since the beginning of last season, I think Alisson has prevented 11 goals. Yeah. Expected goals. I think he's the highest by about 3 goals in comparison to anybody else. You know, guys like him are the reason why we're able to pull through and get results, because you can't say that as a defensive structure we're as good as Arsenal.
The thing is, though, it's interesting because it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. I think if Alisson wasn't so good, I think Klopp would be forced into, you know, improving your defence kind of longer term. And I still feel like there's definitely gaps and weaknesses in that defence of yours. But because Alisson is doing so well, he's kind of papering over the cracks a little bit. Yeah, like, it's working, isn't it? It does work when you have a keeper like that. But yeah, I just feel like, why not, you know, fix the other things? I hate when people do that. It's like, you have a player that's so good in one position that you feel like the people around him now, you don't need to fix it.
Like, help him out.
Still, I mean, if you've done that, you can imagine that. I mean, Arsenal fans have said a lot, like, if we had Alisson with our defence, I mean, probably rarely concede, isn't it? But why can you not have a defence?
If we had a six, if we had a backup centre-back, you know.
And it's little things, and I just feel like, you know, Liverpool now are in a situation where they find themselves top of the league in December. They've been here before. I think there's a lot on the line for quite a few of those players in terms of just, you know, they're in the prime of their career. They might not be this good in 2 years' time. Mm. And I don't think, you look at the players at like Man City and Arsenal, realistically, they got a long way to go, a lot of them in their careers, innit? So I feel like they're kind of not fighting for different things, but the motivations might be slightly different and that might favour Liverpool. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you still have that gap. I mean, the number six is not there. I just feel like longer term, Liverpool have to recruit in January for this to really sustain itself.
You know what I mean? We do. And like you said, you think of some of the players we have. Like, we talk about Alisson right now. I was even saying in the chat, right? Alisson being at Crystal Palace wins us the game. You think of the two amazing saves he made. If Kalea's in the goal...
It's not the only thing, really.
Okay, but he was key to it. You know, obviously Salah scoring and Harvey Elliott as well.
And the referee, but yeah.
Okay, if you say so. But like, you think about if Kalea was in goal, we probably lose that game 2-0. I was also saying, if Alisson was in the net against Fulham, we probably win that game 4-1. So you see where he's really papering over the cracks, because there was like two or three goals that Kalea let in where you just know someone of Alisson's quality is not happening.
I
just feel like Klopp and these owners, man, there's been so many times where one or two signings at a particular time can just get us those trophies or at least get us the season's target, and we haven't done it. And I don't have the faith at the moment that we'll go in January and sign a centre-back and CDM. Because if we did that, I'm honest to win the league, and I don't think we're going to do it.
You say that, but then again, I look historically at like what Liverpool have done in the last like 5-6 seasons in January, and you guys are usually quite active during that period in comparison to other teams.
We don't normally buy what we need, though. We bought Gakpo last season,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, you do spend money in January. Like, whether it's on the right type of players is a different question. But you look at that. Konate came in January, right? I think.
No, Konate didn't come in January.
Diaz came in January,
to be
fair. Van Dijk came in January. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've made big signings in January before. I just think this season, like, you really need to get that spot on. And it would be really like, I think it'd be a slap in the face to Liverpool fans if Klopp went and said, you know what, let me go buy like another attacker or something, and left like
Liverpool and our board are capable of doing that.
You know, but it just seems so obvious. Like, right now, I think you need a right back that can also double as centre half cover. And you need a number six. Like, those are if you fix those two main issues,
bro, we could be.
I mean, we got a fight on our hands. I still think there is now, but you know, it therefore swings things in your favour. And I don't see why you shouldn't be able to
I guarantee you, I don't feel like Klopp sees the problem at DM like others do. So I guarantee we might get a defender.
He has to see it, man. But one thing I will say, I wanted to ask you this here, was I think the problem with Liverpool maybe over the last, again, 5 or 6 years, when they've gone against City, is we spoke about squad depth, right? Mm-hmm. So do they have the players to come off the bench? You know, if you do get the injuries, do you have players to come in and kind of be like for like replacements? I do feel like now you might be in a bit of a situation with that. Like, I look at
in certain areas,
the times this season where, you know, Klopp, to be fair to him, and I haven't always given him credit for this in the past, has made substitutions in a game and it has changed it. You look at the likes of Harvey Elliott coming off the bench, and even Curtis Jones to an extent, but he seems to have more, he seems to have more there to work with, especially in the forward line and especially in midfield. I think there's a lot more options to change a game or impact a game. So yeah, how do you feel? Do you feel like that benefits you, or would you prefer to have like a stronger, you know, starting 11? I feel like the attack is worse, for example, but you have more options there.
This is a tough question. You know what? Yeah, even though the attack, I'm not too pleased with it, and so having the options is quite nice. I don't really have a major problem with the attack. Even in the midfield, I think, you know, we've seen recently like the new signers that have come in, they've started to go a bit flat now. Mm-hmm. And we've got options in the likes of Curtis Jones and Elliot who can come off the bench and raise the level. I just want the balance, to be honest. That's the main thing that I'm concerned about. I feel like in those areas, having options is getting us over the line, because you can always switch things, which I think Klopp has done well. It's just where we've got gaping holes in the squad. DM. I would just like that is the one thing that I like filled the most. And well, to be fair, a centre back would be nice as well. I guess that's a bit more of a depth thing.
I just think what goes through his head sometimes, like you see Trent playing six now, for example. Like, and I understand kind of the logic behind it, but again, it's just like, why sacrifice someone like that when you could just have someone just sit there, man? Let everyone else
just sit there and do it. Do you rate Trent at six?
Nah, you know my opinion. Like, come on. But again, it's like I understand the logic behind it. Obviously, you want him to be in a position where, you know, he's heavily on the ball. Yeah. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just feel like in that position, especially nowadays, you know, you want someone that's going to be able to be disciplined on the ball, you know, control it a bit more, not take too many risks to the point that Trent does. I mean, there were times where he was getting dispossessed, trying to dribble past two or three players, not realizing that he's pretty much the last line of midfield, isn't it? So
yeah. I'll be completely honest with you. And, you know, I love Trent. Single pivot six. He's a long way from that working.
It doesn't make sense.
You know, defensively, he hasn't got the awareness. On the ball, he forces play too much. I don't think it's a position for him. Second pivot in the six, fine. Inverted fullback, fine. You know what, Klopp? Just buy a DM.
You know,
it just like, doesn't really work like
also,
that.
Also, Klopp playing Trent as a number six, to me, is kind of enabling like some of his worst traits, in my opinion, because you're putting him in a position and giving him that confidence, saying to him, yeah, you know what? All of those things that, you know, you think you're good at, go in there and do that. Forget about all the other responsibilities and not coach him to do things such as, you know, use your defensive IQ or be better at, you know, covering certain players and holding onto the ball, innit? I just feel like stay in your position as a right back. The other day, Joe Gomez was probably like, he had the most space out of anyone on that pitch and was probably one of your biggest threats in the last 10 minutes.
Gomez played very well.
Bro, if Trent was in that right back position, I think you guys score a goal sooner than you did. Do you get what I'm saying? Sometimes, you know, it's not.
But I feel like at the moment, you know, if with McAllister injured and at the moment, and Endo wasn't playing well,
he's got
nobody else to put.
I'm
at
disappointed
six.
That Endo didn't get a longer run of games, because I definitely feel like he would have had a game that cost you guys points.
Oh, fairs! I thought you were saying
wanted him to play. Like, I would have loved for him to play against us, honestly. Yeah, I don't think he ever did that. Every time he's coming to the team, I think he's just proved he's not at that level.
He's not at the level. Honestly, I thought. Because he played all right against Sheffield. Obviously, he came on against Fulham and he did well.
Yeah, but that's I thought scoring a goal, like, it doesn't make him that level.
Yeah, of course.
And even him coming off the bench in that game, I was surprised. I mean, he got the goal. I think Klopp, you know, man management-wise, it definitely made sense to keep him in the team because he's probably going to have, you know, a high level of confidence. Let's see what he's really on.
Yeah.
But
he got
we
his
know
chance.
Now.
We knew. We knew. But I thought he could, after seeing him against Sheffield and seeing him come on against Fulham.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Fulham, I didn't really see, like, I saw guys gassing him at Fulham. And I was like, I want him to be able to stop transitions. I want him to receive the ball. Against Sheffield, he was decent, but obviously we weren't tested. So I thought, oh, maybe he's got the capability to do the lower end.
Nah, man. You don't got
and
big
he,
games
he was dreadful
up,
against Palace.
Title race.
Oh, he, I don't, I hope Klopp was never considering to play him in those games.
Yeah. Nah, I mean, the one guy that I did definitely want to shine a light on, though, Harvey Elliott. Again, we discussed him. We had arguments with Chelsea fans. We told them, Harvey Elliott,
say
to
it
me,
right now,
better than Cole Palmer.
Jeez!
In many different areas.
Is that,
you know,
if we had Chelsea fans, they'd be calling for Rondo.
Yeah,
for that,
but
you
I don't
know.
Care, bro. You're looking at someone.
I don't think that's a Rondo,
no,
but
no,
I
we're, not hold, no we're, not,
the
we're not. We're not holding it. No. We don't need to do that,
really,
bro, because sometimes, yeah, I'll be the first to admit, I say things because I'm biased. I want to do agendas. This is not an agenda.
Say it again, man.
We go through all of the areas. Harvey Elliott, to me, is better than Cole Palmer in multiple, you know, different at multiple different things. You look at the different things that Cole Palmer gets credit for. I mean, creating chances.
Mm-hmm.
I think Harvey Elliott is better at him than that. Like, he plays in the number eight. He's a bit more mature. Mm. You know, possession based team. Again, he's impacting games of the magnitude that he is at this age. He's 20 years old.
Yeah, he's 20.
1 year younger than Cole Palmer. And he's doing it for a club that is going for a title.
Yeah.
Cole Palmer, like, you know, you can say Chelsea are struggling, but there's not really no pressure to do anything there. You're not in a team where, you know, everyone else is performing and you're really having to fight for your place. I mean, it's pretty much his team, isn't it? And he's not really taking them anywhere. Do you know what I mean? So, I really feel like Harvey Elliott is, I mean, he came to Liverpool at a young age.
Very young age, yeah.
Started on the right wing, as shown his versatility. I still don't feel like he's in his best position. I think we discussed this the other day. I think if he was in that Cole Palmer type of position in a 4-2-3-1 on the right-hand side, maybe like gets a bit more license to, you know, come inside.
Come inside and stuff like that. Yeah,
then you might see the best of him. But he's really one to watch.
Just playing devil's advocate here, because you know I agree with you. What happens if people would say that Elliott's obviously had a lot of good performances this season, but they've come off the bench, where it's a bit easier to have an impact. Cole Palmer's now become a starter at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Would you say that maybe that's the reason why it seems like Elliott is more impactful continuously?
No, because again, I feel like if you put Elliott in the Chelsea team, that he's going to have a similar impact to Cole Palmer, in my opinion.
Okay,
okay. Like, you put Cole Palmer in this Liverpool team, does he stand out like that? You're not really going to, you're going to be talking about him like you would about Curtis Jones. Do you get what I'm saying? He's not going to do anything special that man can't do.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it at City.
Yeah, and you wouldn't see Cole Palmer holding down a place in this Liverpool team either. Like, he's just going to come in and out of the team. A lot of their midfielders right now, you even look at someone like Szoboszlai, he's been really good this season, hasn't made it to the end of games recently, and hasn't been like your main guy to really impact it from midfield. So, I feel like if Elliott was at a side that was lower down the table and he was playing consistently every single week, you're still going to get a similar impact to what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
Even off the bench. If anything, that him starting games is probably going to help his development even more. Right now, he's not even getting the amount of football really that he needs to go to that next level. So I'm excited to see what happens next. I think longer term, you got to look here and say, you know, where does he fit in if he's going to hold down a place and start? Because I still don't think Klopp fully trusts him as a number eight. And I still, obviously, he's never going to take Salah's place. So it's like, where really does he fit in?
I think he can be pretty good as a number eight now, because I feel like the problem was last season is that we had a lot of tired legs in the midfield. And obviously we're a counter-pressing team.
Yeah.
We're a team that, you know, needs to be quite physically dominant around the pitch, because we, you know, we allow a lot of turnovers because we've got quite direct players. Now, Elliott, you know, next to Henderson and Fabinho was looking really bad because off the ball was our biggest problem.
Yeah.
Now, if he's playing, you know, with the likes of, you know, McAllister and Szoboszlai, who have more energy, I think he can be more effective at the eight. Also, you've got Salah going away in January. The right-hand side is there for him to play. I do feel like, unfortunately, I feel like his long-term career at Liverpool, because obviously we play the 4-3-3. He's not really an eight. He's not really an inside forward. He's an attacking midfielder. I don't know if he'll ever maybe be able to reach his full potential in our system, but I think he can definitely now start to have a good run of games if we get the right profiles around him.
He's got another couple of years, really, where he can afford to have this type of role. You'd hope he doesn't get to that point where, like Phil Foden has, where, you know, realistically he needs to be starting every single week at that age, you know, 23, 24. That's where we're going to find out, you know, where he fits in longer term.
I feel like it's crazy for me that Harvey Elliott's 20.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say, you know, bro. Like, he's been around for a long time.
In my head, Harvey Elliott was 22.
Like, and there were times where, I think even last season, I was saying I would have loved him to have like a loan, because I didn't feel like he was going to get to this point now where he would be like dependent on like this. And he needs those minutes. Players at this age, I feel like it's gone kind of under the radar a lot recently. But we got to remember that players at this age are still supposed to develop. Do you know what I'm saying? They're not supposed to be, you know, the finished article. They need minutes. Players need to go away, play the whole season, get consistent minutes and come back. Similar to kind of what like Conor Gallagher done. You know, Crystal Palace, he's gone away, had a season in the Premier League, starred at a side lower down the table and come back.
They don't really like loans no more in the PL.
Yeah,
though,
man, but it's because younger players are more intrinsic to the team now.
I feel like you've got a lot of games now as well.
Yeah,
so
that's the problem. But I feel like, does it really help them longer term? That's another question, you know.
So, no, it's an interesting one. I feel like the loans helped a lot of players.
And if Harvey Elliott wasn't playing a lot this season, what would you advise for him, really?
If he wasn't playing a lot?
Yeah. You look at like someone like Fabio Carvalho, like obviously he'd have to go on. Yeah, I don't know if he has a long term future, but he had to go on loan.
You'd have to get a loan if you're not going to play a lot.
Yeah.
Nah, but cool. Let's move on from Liverpool and we'll talk about your club, Arsenal. Yep. Obviously lost 1-0 against Villa. A very good performance, I thought, from Arsenal, apart from in the final third, obviously.
Yeah.
Very dominant performance. I thought I was expecting more from Villa, and I know you now owe me £50, by the way. That's but true. I was expecting more from Villa because obviously they were amazing against City.
Yeah.
But yeah, they struggled a lot, yep, like against Arsenal. Weren't able to keep the ball. Weren't really pressing despite holding the line. But Arsenal couldn't score and you lost. So what happened there, Jalen?
It's a weird game to analyze because it went very similar to what I kind of anticipated. I didn't think,
oh, you thought that was going
to
happen.
I didn't, not necessarily that. I don't think it would have been that. I didn't want it to be that easy in terms of like the way that we were kind of cutting okay through them was, yeah, weren't really getting much back. Like I thought they would come at us a lot more in transition, yeah, but I knew that there's no way that they could have maintained the intensity that they put up against Man City, us a couple of days later. Like it's football, man. It's unlikely that that's going to happen. Mm. So I think it was more down to kind of like what we were going to do on the day. The first half, you know, yeah, we had a lot of the ball, but some of the decision-making in the final third, I mean, we've seen it this season. We played Spurs at home. That game, we should have been out of sight. This game, even though we went one goal behind, by halftime, we could have had three or four goals.
Should've
what I'm saying?
Should have been 3-1 at halftime.
And even in the second half, same thing. Chance after chance after chance. And once you got to like that 70th minute, 75th minute point, as an Arsenal fan, you just felt like that time period to score had gone and you could see where the game was going to go.
I thought, even at the 75th, I thought it was going to finish 1-1.
I don't know, man, because as soon as that substitution was made as well, there were a couple injuries around that point. Emery was obviously smart, used his experience in terms of spreading out his substitutions.
His subs are good.
And yeah, man, the game just kind of came and went. And you look at Arsenal side again, I mean, a month ago, we were sitting here and a lot of people were criticising Arsenal for chance creation. I mean, that's not a problem that we have anymore. So I look at the performance at this point of the season. Yeah, it's a poor result, but it doesn't make me any less confident going forward. If anything, I leave the game with a bit more confidence, if anything, because I do feel like we're in a good place. But we can't afford to keep dropping points in games like this where we're supposed to win, bro. Like, I look at the Fulham game at home. That could look criminal at the end of the season. Mm. The Spurs game again. Drop points in that game. We shouldn't never have dropped points in that game where Rice has gone off the pitch. We should have been out of sight in the first half. Newcastle away, again, I don't think it's a game we deserve to lose. Not necessarily a game that we deserve to win, but the one yesterday, can't drop points in that game, bro. Like, we just, so many chances. And again, I go back to the strikers, yeah? And it's like, your attackers, like, your strikers set the tone for your attack, bro. That's the truth. Our system is not built around like, our wingers scoring like a Liverpool was, you know, Salah and Mane. So, you know, we've criticized
to say about that.
Yeah, we'll get onto that. But we've criticized our strikers a lot, and I don't want to keep doing it. But yesterday, a couple of things did stick out for me with Gabriel Jesus. He had a great performance against Luton, and he gets credit for the things that he does around in and around the box. Obviously, he's helped our wingers create more chance, drifts from left to right, presses from the front. One thing that I think really does bug me, and this is why fans get onto him, is that hunger for goals, bro. Like, it's, you look at the other teams like Haaland, he's just so hungry. He lays the ball off, he's sprinting to get inside the box. Starts
sprinting to the box.
And we had Alexis Sanchez who used to do it. We had Aubameyang. They're hungry for goals. They want to be in positions to score, regardless of what they're doing off the ball or whether they give the ball away. When it comes to goals, they want to score.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Bukayo Saka, I don't think he has that hunger yet. I look at Nelly and I do think he has that hunger, but he's so far away from the goal all the time that we don't really get that. So, Gabriel Jesus, he slipped Saka through yesterday. I think it was in the first half. He slipped him through and he doesn't follow the pass. Like, if you're going to play someone in, bro, you have to follow the pass and get into a position to score, bro. And even when you're in positions to score, Saka played him in again. Poor touch. Like, and you're not angry when you miss chances, brother. You get me? Sometimes you see strikers be like, I look at Nunes, yeah. Like, for example, like, Nunes misses chances, yeah, but the guy's hungry, bro. Do you get it? The movement in the box, brother. Man's making runs all the time. Do you get what I'm saying?
He's hungry for goals.
Our strikers ain't hungry, bro. They're not hungry enough. They don't want to. It's like they don't want to score. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, going forward, that has to change. Quote where he said, "Oh, he shouldn't be judged on just goals. He brings a lot more."
No, you are judged on goals, brother. You got two goals in 11 games.
Guy said, "Bun that." Now you are.
Yeah, but it's not. It's not now you are. You're always gonna. That's the minimum level, yeah, for a striker to me at Arsenal. You have to be scoring like one in every two games, yeah. That's the minimum.
So about 18 goals for
you. He's played 11 games now. He should be on 5 or 6 goals. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Okay. Regardless, you got a couple sub performances. Yeah, you played out wide a little bit. Cool. I give you a bit of leeway. 2 is not enough. Sorry.
Fair. So you want more goals from him?
Even for all of the extra stuff that he's doing, 2 goals in 11 games isn't enough. And Gabriel Jesus has to be hitting that 15 goal point, in my opinion, for it to really make sense.
I'm not sure he will.
It doesn't look like it. I mean, he doesn't take penalties. So again, we'll take that into account. Fair enough. But you're going to have games like this. As Arsenal fans, we got to accept that without, you know, that main presence. That main presence. We're going to have games like this, bro. You know what I mean?
Cool. Second question. Do Arsenal have a victim mentality?
Victim mentality.
Because it seems like, let me just give you some part context of the fan before base. I say. It seems like you man can't lose a game without it being a conspiracy theory.
I don't agree with that. We've only lost two games.
Yeah, we've lost two games.
And both of them had bad decisions. So it's just a coincidence.
Was it the
game that we lost against West Ham in the cup, no one complained. There was no VAR problems.
Okay,
there.
Yeah, fair.
We lost against Lons in the Champions League. No problems there.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that the two games we lost in the Premier League, poor decision.
The song and dance that you guys are making about it, you don't think it's a bit much?
I mean,
much?
Again, the two things can be true, right? Yesterday, we were poor in front of goal. We shouldn't even have had to rely on VAR, really.
Yeah.
But there was still, in my opinion, a questionable decision there.
For me, the Newcastle one, some controversy. I don't think it's... At the end of the day, they gave a clear reason as to why they didn't give it.
I get it, man. But again, my problem is not necessarily with the decision that's made. As a football fan, I think a lot of the decisions, as fans, we agree, we don't want them to be given, right? But if other clubs are getting those, we have to get them too.
Everyone's got poor.
No, I know. But I'm saying as a fan, it's like, for example, like the goal that was disallowed yesterday, the Havertz goal, cool. It's hit his hand, I get it. Like, it brushes it, cool. Should that really be a decision that is ruling out a goal? In my opinion, as a fan, and this is not just as an Arsenal fan, I don't think a goal like that should be disallowed, mainly because the ball has also come off the defender's hand. But when it's a defender...
Didn't it come off Havertz's hand first?
No, bro. That's what I'm trying to say. His hand has gone like this. I was watching, I was thinking, bro, what? Is this not a penalty? Fair enough, it's not a penalty, but you can't not penalise that.
So it came off his hand first?
Yeah, it came off Cash's hand and then it's hit. It's not even like it's hit it. It's like brushed it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay, I think I saw this, yeah.
And you know, it's one of them ones as well where the rule is like, you have to gain an advantage. Now, I feel like there was really an advantage gained from it in his hand in that position because it would have hit his leg and probably end up in the same position anyway.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So it's like, again, as a fan.
But isn't the rule that clear and obvious? So,
and that's my other problem.
Can they overturn the ref's decision? Because they probably wouldn't have.
This is my other problem. Yeah, I said it yesterday. You guys tried to tell me this was excellent refereeing. Yeah, there is no way.
Okay,
there's no way that.
So
that
why would he give it?
Because, bro. But the thing is, this is what I'm saying. I think he guessed, didn't it? I think he seen something go on between them, and he said, you know what? There's probably a high likelihood that that's hit someone's hand. I'm gonna give it on the pitch. I personally feel that that's what he's done, innit? And fair enough. Yeah, cool. It did hit his hand, but. If you look at the view of where he was, there's no way that he could have seen that, bro. And There's no way. Because you can even see, bro, when it hits his hand, it's not even bait like that. It's barely hit it. Do you get what I'm saying? So how's he seen that?
Yeah.
So, again, I feel like this, a lot of fans as well, they kind of make mistakes in terms of, you see the clear and obvious thing. They think that if it's not clear and obvious, they have to give the goal. Whereas it's like, you stay with the on-field decision.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where a lot of Arsenal fans like have obviously gone overboard because
I feel like
the decision's not necessarily wrong.
Some of your fan base are big babies.
I'll be honest with you.
They were saying that, oh, how are we going to beat Liverpool?
No.
When Liverpool are getting such decisions. You know, we've had some terrible bad decisions go against our way. Like, literally, I just got to finish my point here. Like, one point that they said, they were complaining about like, oh, how can we, you know, kind of beat Liverpool in this title race when they get every decision. And one of the points that they were complaining about is the fact that they didn't get the Gabriel Jesus penalty.
That was a penalty.
Today, we had something somewhat similar with Kwanzaa's penalty on the penalty that he conceded against, I can't remember the name, Mateta.
Yeah, which was given.
So how can you in the same breath say that Liverpool get favouritism?
What do you mean?
A decision that didn't go your way went against us. So it's just, the decisions... Refereeing this year has just not had consistency.
But that's what I'm trying to say. It's inconsistency and that's frustrating because it's like, if that decision wasn't given, as an Arsenal fan, I could sit there and watch a game 5 hours later and see the one that we didn't get given and say, all right, cool.
By the way, I do actually think that Kwanzaa... I feel like Kwanzaa was worse than your one.
It was a little bit worse, but again...
He came at a lot more speed. Mateta got taken out, whereas I think with Gabriel Jesus, he definitely could have continued playing.
That's fair enough.
And he dived.
Listen, my friend... We know the reason why players have to dive. I've actually had this opinion for a very, very long time. Yeah. But players get criticized for diving. Yeah. But there's sometimes where a player is clearly fouled them. But if they don't go down, they're not getting anything for it, innit?
But for me, it's when it's like you've gone.
You shouldn't, like a player shouldn't. If a player kicks you, yeah, and it's not enough to send you to the ground, that doesn't mean it's not a foul.
No, it doesn't. No.
Yeah, and I've always had a problem with that.
You could have got there. You could have got there.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Even if he got there, I'd take the penalty. Yeah, but I'd rather have the pen.
I don't think he was delayed. Like, you know when, like,
it's not about being
someone
delayed.
Someone kicks
bro.
You. He's gone to, and it's like, it stopped you from getting to the ball.
If we watch it again, yeah, he's gone to obviously kick. The ball is here, yeah? And Douglas Luiz has gone to obviously volley the ball.
Yeah.
He's volleyed his leg. There's no argument, but the
contact was small.
It doesn't matter, bro.
I feel like it could have been given. I don't think it's a howler for it not to be given, in my opinion.
It's a penalty, yeah? Based on what else? No, listen. If we were outside of the VAR era, I'd say no. But based on what else has been given around the league and the type of decisions that we're seeing, especially the way that, you know the refs are looking at things in slow-mo now and are seeing if there's a little bit of contact and we're looking at it in slow-mo, it obviously looks worse, we're going to give it. So I don't know how you look at that one in slow motion, the way that referees have been seeing it, and not give it. That doesn't make sense to me.
I was surprised it wasn't given.
Very, very surprising.
I don't think it was a howler. I'll be angry if I was an Arsenal fan.
As I said, as an Arsenal fan, I don't think it's victim mentality. As I said, I think I recognise that we should have won that game without that. But again, 50-50s like this, they do add up. And I'd like to see better on-field decisions made, because again, it's like if a decision is made on the pitch, it swings things in your favour, because then they have to disprove it. And it's like going to court and someone has to prove that something happened rather than saying, you know what, there's not enough evidence to say that it didn't happen. Do you get what I mean? It's like, if the penalty was given on field, you're not going to overturn it, innit? No, do you get what I'm saying? That's more what it is. But again, I'm not going to sit here and say we lost that game because of VAR. We didn't.
Right, we got to move off Arsenal now. What's next on our agenda?
We've got to talk about Nelly, mate.
Oh, we've got to talk about Martinelli. Yeah, quickly. Quickly,
we'll do
it
quick, though.
Yeah, okay, right. Quickly, disappointed. In my opinion, I feel like I saw a stat. Wait, I think you put in the chat. I actually want to get that stat first. Let me try to find it. Do you remember it?
I'm just trying to find the stat quickly. While you're trying to find that, yeah, do you think the Diego Carlos one was a red?
The Diego Carlos one?
The elbow.
Oh, it's tough. Because I just want you
to see it from an Arsenal fan's perspective, yeah? Both games we've lost, we've had two challenges like that. We've had...
Oh, I actually feel like Bruno G's was more of a red than that one.
Yeah, no,
Bruno
agree,
G, there's no reason. He just left that in there on, just for malice and Violet Condit. And I feel like you're just doing a player like that. That should be a red. But I feel like... is it his name Carlos?
Yeah.
Yeah, Carlos is trying to block the run. And I feel like he's just messed up. You know the ones you're trying to block his run and you just kind of gone out.
Do you know why this is going to be? It's so predictable what's going to happen here. Because it's going to happen to us one time. Our player's going to do that. And he's going to
get set up.
It's going to, bro, clip this. Watch. But 3-4 months time, it's going to happen to us here. And we're all going to sit here and we're going to put the pictures next to each other.
But I do feel like people need to understand VAR. Like, I do feel like VAR has made mistakes this season. But people need to understand it, right? The ref saw that and gave him a yellow.
Yeah.
If I'm VAR, I probably leave it and don't give him a red. If the ref gave him a red at the same time, if I'm VAR, I'm not going to overturn it. So I don't think it's the worst decision in the world. But obviously you guys go, blah, blah, blah. Because, and that's why I think sometimes I'm seeing Arsenal fans go off.
I get frustration. It's going to take time for them to settle. Like, I've seen a lot of fans come out today and they've settled down. And they've said, you know what, fair enough. That probably wasn't, but you know, the rule is this. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's all I want. But like, sometimes with your fan base especially.
When decisions go against other clubs, they do the same thing. It's just less deep. That's the reality.
They do the same thing. That's the truth. We will say that. Say, for instance, Liverpool fans, other fans, they'll say a decision's trash, innit? But they don't go and there's a conspiracy against Arsenal.
Yeah, but nothing's happened to you guys. Like, at the end of the day,
nothing's happened against us.
In terms of external things that have happened, you look at like Arteta getting banned, for example, for celebrating a winner. Like, that's not a cool
decision.
That was
a mad thing. I can't lie. Yeah,
we look at those things and then, again, we just ask for consistency because the things that have been kind of put against Arteta, De Zerbi has done similar things. He's made similar comments. Yeah, he also ran onto the pitch and didn't get booked, by the way, for a last minute winner. So again, consistency, bro. So I can see why they're going with that angle. Yeah, it's overdone, but you can see it.
Okay, I found it now.
Go on, mate.
So
time ticking.
Just very quickly, I just want to talk about Mr. Martinelli. Just waiting for it to load. So I saw a tweet where he said he is statistically and by the way, Arsenal's best finisher. Okay, yeah. So at the moment, Martinelli is averaging less shots per 90 than Casemiro, Dwight McNeil, and Alex Iwobi.
Yeah.
Which is quite a mad stat. And I think that overall, Alright, sounds okay, yeah, cool. Alright. Let me start from the top again. Sorry guys, we just heard a little siren. Thought that we may need to vacate the area. Alright, cool. So at the moment, Martinelli is averaging less shots per 90 than Casemiro, Dwight McNeil, and Alex Iwobi. And for me, that is shameful. And I feel like, yes, maybe Martinelli isn't doing enough when he's getting to the final third. We did see that against Aston Villa. Yeah. But I don't think he's getting into enough goal-scoring opportunities. When you look at a stat like that, right, that's a system thing. And I feel like Arteta at the moment is, because of his system, he's playing him far too out wide. But he's got a player there. Like I always say, yeah, have a system. But if you've got certain serious talents in your team, you've got to tailor the system for them. And that's what the best managers do for their best players. Martinelli could be one of Arsenal's best players. And they got him well out wide. In my opinion, Arteta don't know how to use him. Because I tell you, if Martinelli was playing Klopp, he'd be playing like a different sort of inside forward.
I get that.
And we'd be giving him the treatment deserves. He's got the ability to be Sadio Mane.
He's better than your players, yes. But what I would say...
No, he's better than our left wingers. He's not better.
Okay, relax. But you're saying give him the credit he deserves. If he goes to your club...
He'd be behind Salah, though.
But we look at the goal that he scored against PSV, for example. Yeah, the likelihood of that happening in a Premier League game for us is very low. That's the reality. But the teams that we play against, they don't play high. Yeah. And Villa actually done that, which was actually refreshing yesterday to see the spacing behind for him. Mm. And he did get in quite a few times. Again,
still quite wide.
Two things can be true. Yes, when he gets into the final third, I do feel like his end product this season has been poor. But again, he's not getting into the situations enough. And also, when he does get into the final third, a lot of the time, he's having to shift onto his left foot and deliver a cross, which
is
not good for him. Come on, man. He's not good at that. So, and then he's getting criticism for that. So I look at it again. And you said to tailor the system around him. Now, what could you really change in reality?
Bear in mind, do some rotations.
We'll get onto that. But bear in mind that the inversion happens on his side. Yeah. So realistically, when we're looking at there holding a width, for example, that's going to continue. And realistically, that's going to continue. So, as you said, my biggest issue is knowing that Gabriel Jesus can play out wide and has played left wing for us, right wing, wherever it is. Why is it not a thing where them two can just switch positions in a game? Like yesterday.
That's what I'm saying.
Yesterday, we look at it, Martinelli keeps getting taken off with 20 minutes to go when we're chasing a goal. I don't understand it because
he doesn't play that well.
One of our best finishers, again, though, I would still keep him in and around the team. And yesterday, playing against a high line, Trossard came on and we lost all momentum. Like, yes, he was playing poorly, but he was the only one getting in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, Gabriel Jesus can easily go to the left-hand side where he's probably better in those situations where you're going 1v1 versus a defender, still do everything that he's doing before, and he's not worse defensively, innit? Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes I feel like with Martinelli, the reason why he plays on that left-hand side is also to kind of do with his defensive work rate. Mm. But you're not losing anything if Jesus is playing there. So why sometimes can we not get a situation where Martinelli is the nine and Jesus is the left winger?
I just don't know why they don't even rotate. Because I get that.
Yeah, they used to, though. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they used to last season. Because I get the inversion happens in the side, so he has to stay very wide. Because that's a problem I had with Salah before, until Salah started this creativity bag, and I said it don't even matter that he's out wide. But I don't get it, because last season, Martinelli and Jesus used to do some nice little rotations.
Because I think, as well, Jesus has moved more towards the right-hand side this year as well. Him and Saka seem like they're kind of doing a little bit more interplay. Odegaard's obviously dropped a bit further in. But, again, I just look at it and... You're right. Martinelli doesn't get enough shots on goal. He doesn't get into enough positions to score. And the thing is now, you've got Havertz as well that's crashing the box from his side. So it's another reason as to why he has to hold the width. Do you know what I mean?
Your guy's not doing what he needs to be doing, man. But
Martinelli should be... he's capable of having a 20-goal season, Prem season. 100%.
Yeah, that's what I think he is.
And he's never gonna get that with us right now.
Let's see you be able to do it, my bro. You should come to us. But anyway, Villa, how good are they? What can they do? Are they title contenders?
I mean, if we're calling you guys title contenders, Villa might as well. Do you know what I'm saying? Because we don't know. Yeah, but they could be like that, though. You don't know. It could be a club in a position where they're not supposed to be. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like Villa will drop off.
I think naturally they will. They will drop off. But again, it's like,
they're not very good away from home at all.
Yeah, away from home is a big problem. I still think we look at it again. Yeah, the high line. Yeah, cool. They've had it for the whole year, but teams are going to eventually find out how to get success against that. Probably going to watch part of that Arsenal game and see what we done to get through them. You guys better than 3-0. And I think with more teams that are going to be a bit more direct against that, teams adapting naturally, I think Emery's going to have to change certain things over time. Let's see how sustainable that can be. But if you look at if you look at like the race for top four right now and that fourth and fifth place position, I mean,
I think that's a more interesting. Could they finish top four?
Yeah, 100%. I think between them and Spurs, I think Spurs have obviously been more impressive over the course of the whole season. But, you know, both teams at their best.
Call it now.
It's difficult, bro.
Call it, man. You're a podcaster.
If I was to predict who's going to finish fourth out of two. It's funny because, like, you'd say Spurs, the history of the Spurs, yeah, but then the history of the Emery for us wasn't great either. So it's like both of them could fall off at different points. I don't see United really coming back into it like that. I mean, fifth place could get Champions League this year, right?
Yeah, it can.
So, actually. I mean, there is a situation where, I mean, you could have both of them fourth and fifth and they both finished there.
Yeah, who's fourth?
Bruh.
I think it will be Spurs, me personally.
I don't want to say
since
Spurs.
You're struggling. I think once Spurs get their players back, I think right now, Villa, if Villa can get some points on them while they don't have their players, fair enough.
But I feel like once
they get Madders, once they get Van de Ven back, Spurs are, you know what I'm saying, Spurs show the level home and away.
I suppose got
which
European
is of a higher level than we've
Spurs
seen from
got
Villa.
European football now. I think Villa have got Conference League as well. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, they could come into it.
Excuse me.
Are both of them in better positions than like Newcastle?
Newcastle in the mix. Obviously, Newcastle got battered today, though.
Did
you finish 3-0?
I think Villa are a very good side, a very good Premier League side. Whether they're in a title race, I think it's premature. Like, we've had a few seasons ago, I remember there was a game where Liverpool played Spurs in December when Mourinho was there and Spurs were second place. That was the first second, you know, game clash. And I think Spurs ended up finishing like seventh place. You know what I mean? So, it's a bit early. They've obviously had two good results. They beat, the top two sides really in the league right now, arguably, you know, Liverpool up there. But they're beating them back-to-back at home. Now, that's not an easy thing to do. But again, if they can't improve that away form, which it doesn't seem like they're going to do right now. Mm-hmm. They're not serious title contenders, man. Let's be honest about it.
Makes sense. Okay, cool.
But big up Leon Bailey, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Jamaica players. Out here, balling in the Premier League. We've got the Copa America coming up. We're going to do something this year. You know what I'm saying? Big up my guy.
Bailey doesn't play too well for Jamaica, though.
What do you mean doesn't play too? Sometimes Jamaica has international fixtures that clash with the season, innit?
Oh, okay.
But during international break, obviously, we get our strongest team and we make things happen. You know what I'm saying? It's a turning point for the guys.
But even like when he does play, I've heard that people say that.
He plays, bro.
I know he plays.
Him, Damari Gray.
Apparently, Cordova Reed, the guy plays better for Jamaica than Bailey.
Bailey, Damari Gray, Mikel Antonio.
Okay. Yeah. That's a decent
front
three.
We're going to make something happen, yeah. And
what are you
to be honest,
the Copa America,
going
then?
To the Copa America, us qualifying, I do feel like might bring some guys out of the woodwork. Like they might be like, you know what? I'm never going to play for England. Let me go play for Jamaica. You get it?
Yeah.
We'll make things happen. But yeah, Leon Bailey, I mean, it's refreshing again to see players come to the Premier League. Yeah. And realistically, we were used to players coming here and taking maybe a year to get going, a year and a half, you know, 18 months, whatever it is. Yeah. You come into a stable setup and you're allowed that time to progress. I think he's a good example of that. He's been there for a while now. Mm. And we're finally seeing that the level that people thought he could get to. Because before he did go to Aston Villa, let's not forget, he was linked to clubs that were in the top six.
Yeah.
He was linked to the likes of, you know, United and
Chelsea.
Yeah,
United
and whatever
Chelsea
it is.
And
I think from Leverkusen, like, obviously him and Diaby both come from there. We're both very good players in that league in their own respect. And it's a credit to the Premier League, really, that a team like Aston Villa can have both of those players, like, going against, you know, the top side. So let's not discredit, you know, what Villa are and what they do. But again, it's really good to see Leon Bailey finally hit, like, the level that people thought he could get to. And now it's like, you know, how far can he progress?
He's your best player, you know, because obviously he's actually like Jamaica born and bred.
Yeah, man.
And like he would have always represented Jamaica rather than, obviously it is nice to see other guys from England represent Jamaica, but you know, normally in their heads, England is first and then they play for Jamaica
when
they can't
make
the squad.
The biggest credit to him now is, as I said, like he's managed to maintain that place on the right-hand side where Diaby had a really strong start to the season.
Yeah,
Diaby's now on the bench, isn't it? So, yeah, man, really, really impressed with him. I hope he continues going. Because as I said, even though Villa, you know, they beat us yesterday, part of me was happy that he done something.
Yeah, you
know
he did a little assist. It was a nice assist still.
He got the assist against us.
Had your guy Gabriel on skates?
Yeah, I don't know. On the goal, actually, people said that defensively we were poor. I just think it was a really well-worked goal.
Yeah, I think it was just good play. Oh, I don't think you were defensively poor.
It was just a good goal.
Very good movements in between the lines. All right, cool. United and Chelsea, you got us quickly talk on them.
No problem, man.
Them, man, are rubbed. What are we saying about them, man? Which one do you want to start with?
I want to start with Chelsea, man, because
I feel like you got a couple of points to say about Chelsea. Talk to me, JG. You want to talk on Poch, don't you?
It's not that I want to talk. Do you know what it is? Yeah. It's not that I want to. I don't want to get onto Poch because I understand the situation. I understand Chelsea in a transition period. Yeah, but there's no transition period where you can tell me that 5 wins in 16 games is good enough with the money that's being spent, with the fact that you had a whole preseason, which Graham Potter didn't have.
Yeah.
And then you look at some of the games that they're losing, and you still look at the squad that they have on paper. Yes, they've had injuries, but the team that is starting and the core players of this Chelsea side are still there, innit? And they still have 5 wins in 16 games. That's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
It's not good enough, bro. Listen. And I'm not saying go out and sack him, because again, I don't feel like there's an obvious option that's going to come in and make this side better. But as Chelsea fans, these guys cannot be accepting this as a minimum level for Chelsea Football Club, bro. It's not good enough.
100%. I mean, listen. I'll talk right now, innit? I feel like the treatment that Poch is getting by the media is evidence that Chelsea are a small club.
Yeah, 100%.
Right now, in the Premier League, Chelsea are 12th. Yeah?
Chelsea have had the worst 2023. Statistically, they are at the bottom. Premier League points for 2023, Chelsea are 20th place.
That's crazy. Bro, we are halfway through the season. I'm sorry. If it was Liverpool, if it was United, if it was Arsenal, the manager would be getting heat. Look at the heat that Ten Hag is getting, and United are like 6th or something like that. Chelsea have been losing and losing and losing, bro. Yeah, it's, take it easy with Poch. Yeah, it's, even if Poch is getting criticised, they ain't, you know what I'm saying? When United and Liverpool, Arsenal are losing and it's dire, Sky Sports will dedicate a whole, like half an hour segment to just ripping into the club. But with Chelsea, it's it goes under the radar. Man's 12.
We don't care. That's the reality.
It's small club.
And it's the same as
small club. They're not big in the media. They don't sell like that. Chelsea in disarray don't sell like Liverpool in disarray. Like United in disarray. And I think it's evidence of that.
Yeah. I mean, again, if we go back to, you look at last season and a lot of the criticism that Potter was getting, I mean, I don't see a lot that's changed, in all honesty. Like, you look at Chelsea now and the way that they're losing these games, yeah, and how they're playing. A lot of their fans seem to think that, you know, we're keeping the ball well. We've got good build-up. The defense ain't that bad. But, bro, consistently, if that continues to happen, that's a problem. It can't just be, you can't just continuously keep blaming finishers, bro. Because at the end of the day, yeah, your finishers might be poor. I get Jackson, he's not the best in the world. Sterling had a good start to the season. You guys have been gassing up Cole Palmer like he's the best thing since, you know, I don't know who you want to mention, right? I'm not going to say what I said at the GC. But, again... You got all of these guys, bro, there's no excuse. You got two £100 million DMs that have been consistently fit.
Get me started on them, man.
Like, we can't keep letting these guys off the hook now. I'm sorry. And Chelsea fans themselves are the worst, because you guys got to hold your own team accountable and actually say to yourself, I'm not saying be toxic, but bro, you got to ask yourself, is this good enough?
I feel like Poch needs to come under some pressure. Some signs needs to come under pressure.
But you know what it is?
Well.
You got to remember, yeah, Chelsea haven't really been in this situation for a long time, so I don't even think they realise how bad it is. This isn't a banter era, brother. This is a relegation scrap that you man are in. And the only reason that you're busting case is because the teams at the bottom are genuinely woeful. Like, in any other Premier League season, you man would be right in there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're closer to the bottom than you are to even being in the top four right now, in my opinion.
Are they?
No, I'm just saying, like, you're closer to those clubs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So a lot has to change. And again, what do they do long term? Because you can't consistently keep spending money and not be able to get rid of the players that are there right now. What other players what other teams around the world are looking at Chelsea right now saying, you know, let's go and pick up, you know, Kukurea, for example. He's not performing there. Let's go grab him for 50
You're not
mil.
Really looking at him there.
Yeah, unless you're getting a good deal. Like, how are they going to get
the
rid of
the only thing
guys,
that
bro?
They've kind of bust cases, they ain't, their wage bill's not too bad. They don't have guys.
The wage bill ain't that bad, but they're on 8-year contracts. You know what I'm saying? How are you going to get rid of these guys for the same price that you bought them for when you've overspent in the first
place? They won't get rid of them for
and
the
they
same
haven't,
price.
Unless you get stupid clubs like Arsenal coming in and see a market opportunity, you know, and taking Havertz.
No, I feel like they'll be able to sell their players, but they just won't sell them for the same... Because again, they went and bought a lot of their players at an inflated price.
And at what
point... But I think they'll be able to sell them because they haven't got them on two bad contracts.
In your opinion, at what point does Pochettino come under pressure for his job? Because
obviously, I mean, if he's spending a prolonged amount of time... You know, not in the top half of the table, he has to, because it's just not.
Do you feel like the football has improved from last season?
It's slightly better, but it's got kind of.
For a guy that's had like the whole preseason and being able to bring in some of
if you bring that into, no, but it is better though.
And does Nkunku change things for them? Because I feel like that's the really lazy excuse right now. I get, yeah, cool.
He can finish.
He's going to finish, yeah. But is he going to take them to a position where they should really be? No.
Well, yeah, they've got other shit. Guys got to step up. But there's a problem. Like, you've got a lot of guys that aren't really proven, guys that aren't used to this. When you get all this pressure, you've got guys that, you know, Chelsea got a lot of guys right now, they don't want to be in this situation. They don't know how to ride through it. You see, like, other clubs, like, and that's the problem when you go and buy kids and you go and buy guys that are improving, you keep on trying to get gems.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You look at other clubs, like, you know, I use the example of Liverpool again, but you think of when we were down in the mud, we were like eighth at a period last season. You got guys like Salah and even Henderson who left, and guys who are more proven, who will keep on telling the players that this ain't good enough. You know what I'm saying? You can't go and enjoy your life.
Yeah.
You know, I was seeing a clip of Salah telling the young boys that, you know, there's no going out and enjoying yourself when the club are in a position that they're in.
Do you know what the worst thing is for me as well? At Chelsea right now, the main thing about a project is that even if the results aren't going well, your younger players have to improve, innit? And I look at their players from the start of the season to now, or when Pochettino first started working with them, how many of them have got better? Not really anyone. Like, Cole, for example, has come into the side, yeah? And it's like, you wouldn't say that his level now is
higher. Cole Palmer, did you say?
No, Colewell.
Cole.
Yeah, you wouldn't say it's higher now than it was at Brighton, would you?
Is he as exposed as he was at Brighton, though?
Yeah, but the level hasn't improved, is what I'm saying. Okay, and overall, that has to be the goal. Even if you finish 10th this season, yeah, the minimum that you have to get out of it is that these young players have at least bettered themselves. Yeah, I mean, Gallagher's improved, but again,
Gallagher's better than the 220 million pivot. He is. Gallagher's been their best midfielder this season.
The last thing that I think...
Caicedo and Enzo, you're a disgrace.
The last thing I want to touch on, yeah, is I think Reece James now, another injury today, club captain.
I thought you were telling me he was the most complete fullback of all time just the other day.
I saw Lenny King do an interview the other day and he said that he felt like he was in that conversation with the John Terrys and that, but they had the longevity. They didn't get the injuries he had, yeah.
Yeah.
Reece James is now in that bracket, bro.
Oh, Ledley King.
He has to be, bro.
Yeah, basically.
To the point where if he was fit, yeah, cool. We're going to talk about the times there. Oh, yeah, Reece James, when he was fit, he was, you know, he was up there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But he's not going to be around. I think you've got to accept that from now on.
It's crazy.
You can't continuously keep getting injuries.
How old is he? 23 or something?
Yeah, but you just got to understand. That's the type of player.
To be this injury point at 23 is crazy.
Like, is it a thing now where Chelsea say, you know what, like they did with Ledley King, you can't train? That's it, bro. Because
that would be crazy,
yeah, but that's it seems like we're going down that route because every single time the guy comes back into the team, 2-3 games later, he picks up an injury.
Yeah, it's
what can you really do, innit? So I think maybe Chelsea got to move. I'm not even gonna say move on, but I think you see the same way like Liverpool have moved on from like thinking about Thiago as part of their plans. Yeah, same way that I've kind of got with Partey at Arsenal. Reece James kind of now in that bracket, man.
That's the skipper though.
Doesn't matter, bro.
Are you gonna apologize for comparing him to Trent?
No, I'm not because I still think if you get a player that's fit,
yeah,
he's still better.
But will he be fit?
But he's not, exactly.
All right,
so you were wrong. He's not in a conversation. No, I wasn't wrong.
Yeah, you were wrong. I wasn't wrong. Because he's not fit.
No.
Yeah, yes, you were wrong, bro. You literally just said if you get a player that's fit.
Don't get distracted.
But he's not fit.
Don't get distracted.
No, but I'm telling you, why did you just admit it? Why are you going to move on now? See, the guy wants to move on. He knows he wasn't wrong.
No, because you're going to get
Reece James. Hey, let me just talk in it. Reece James is incomparable to Trent Alexander-Arnold. The guy
because he's not fit. That's the only reason, though. It's not a footballing reason.
That's a big reason.
I think the point between James and Trent has always been if Reece James was fit, he would be better.
But he's not.
Yeah, so. He's not in the combo no more. That's it.
And even then, still, of course, if he was fit.
No.
Even then, still, if he wants to get fit, even if he's fit, you got to do the work.
No, let's move on.
You got to do the work. Your footballing career can't be on contingent arguments.
Let's move on.
Trent does the business. All right, last topic, United. I think so, yeah. We've got to finish for 8:20, man.
Man United, 3-0, home to Bournemouth.
How long have we been running now? 53, yeah.
3-0 loss at home to Bournemouth. You can see that the fans are obviously not happy. They got Bayern Munich next. They got Anfield next weekend. Does Ten Hag survive that period?
Does he survive? He might not.
Funny enough,
they got Bayern at OT.
Yeah, I think they might win.
Bayern aren't good defensively, and I feel like Bayern have already qualified for the Champions League.
I hear that.
For the next stage.
But Bayern Munich just lost 5-1 at the weekend. You know Bayern, them man have pride, brother.
Yeah,
you get me. Yeah, so going into that game, I don't feel like they just.
Do you think Tuchel's gonna play a tough?
I don't know if he'll play a tough side, but you know they're gonna want to respond.
They need to bounce back.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And just because they qualify at top of the group again, Bayern Munich is like a siege mentality, bro. Like they're man gonna go into that game and they're gonna want to respond. So I don't think United off the hook. They might go into the game and you know I look at the problem now with them. Yeah, is like the start of the season. that man used to say, all right, cool, we've got injuries. You know, Hojlund wasn't starting right at the start. You know, you looked at Rashford, he was playing the number nine. So all of these things now, you look at like the front three that they would have thought was their best at the start of the season. Yeah, you had Rashford, Hojlund and Anthony. This week, you wouldn't necessarily say that two of those guys are like sure on starters. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm. And the backup, who are coming in, Martial, obviously Garnacho's there, they're not really better either, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Garnacho's so I feel been like better than Rashford this season.
Yeah, but I feel like the problem now is worse because it's like, what is actually their best 11, innit? Do you know what I mean? And I don't think Ten Hag knows that. I think he's just doing it based on, you know, whoever's in form or whatever it is. But the form of the guys coming in isn't even that great. And I think that's why he's trusting someone like McTominay, who, yeah, cool, he's getting goals.
Ten Hag has some weird lineup choices, I'm not going to lie. You wanted to talk on the fact that Varane's been iced out. Talk to us.
I mean, I disagree with a few things that he's done. As an Arsenal fan, I don't want to, obviously, I don't like gaslighting fans, innit? Like, Raf and Raheem, their man, have come and told me that, you know, Varane isn't the best on the ball, you know. And to be fair to Maguire, he hasn't been that bad, right? Yeah. But again, Varane to me is still one of United's best centre halves, one of the two. So if he's fit, he should play. And to be honest, they spent 6 weeks telling us that Varane was injured and they were waiting for him to come back. You know, when they were getting poor results, they were like, we're waiting for this guy to come back. Mm. We're waiting for that guy to come back. The guys have come back now, and now you don't want them to play. So what do you want here?
For me, I don't mind Ten Hag's decision on Varane because I'm like, he's very injury prone and I get that, you know, sometimes you want to go on without him.
You got to remember as well, yeah, is that he dropped Varane and he said it was for tactical reasons because he was worse on the ball.
Oh, okay.
So I don't mind that. But then does that decision become consistent with him playing McTominay?
Not really in the midfield.
And that's where the problem is, isn't it?
But you know what it is for me, right? I don't mind that statement about Varane.
I don't mind it's like
you play Evans.
Yeah, but that's my point. As long as you're
consistent. I feel like Evans is taking it too far.
Like, as long as you're consistent.
Okay, and he's got this thing about, I need a left-sided centre-back on the left side. Like, this is men's football.
Yeah,
You can't have the ideal situation. Like, Evans over Varane is like, I mean, does Evans have a long-term at the future of the club? No.
He's on a short-term contract.
Exactly. Is Evans, why are you keeping Varane on the bench for Evans? I understand maybe when he's playing Shaw or Lindelof or maybe other guys that he prefers because Varane's too injury prone, but Evans.
You see, when you're talking about man management, like this is where I go back and I say, you might be saying, cool, he's frozen guys out that he wants to get rid of longer term, but these are still guys that in the short term are going to make sure that he stays in his job. And playing someone like Evans, who wasn't getting bought by no clubs, he was available on a free in the summer. Not even Luton looked at him, and then man, I brought him in and now he been starting games for them. Obviously not now. Luke Shaw's come in and obviously played, you know, in that centre-half position, but that's how it started. And as I said, like, everyone looks for consistency, innit? And I feel like it's either he's got to go fully towards playing towards his style of football and progressing that, or he's got to go for results. You can't be in the middle of two.
It's half-half.
And as I said, the decision to play McTominay is one of those decisions that, you know, it goes against the stuff that he's doing when he's taking out players like Ronaldo and he's taking players like Varane out of the team. Because those are, in order for you to put your style on the side or stamp your authority down, but you're letting someone like McTominay come in and play.
Because he wants results.
Because you want results, exactly. So which one is it, bro? Do you get it? Make a decision,
brother.
Are the lights too bright over there or something? Well, you can't make decisions. You're trying to compare Ten Hag to the best managers in the Premier League. They try to say he was better than Arteta. You think Arteta's going to do that? Is it possible?
So do you think he might get sacked by the Anfield game? Because we're gonna smash you guys.
I think they
we're
will,
gonna smash
again,
you guys.
You know what it is,
Khabib.
I think without that Bournemouth result, I think he would have. I don't think he'd even be in a position to get sacked right now. In all honesty, because a lot of the games that he's losing right now, a lot of people are putting it down to, you know, the players or external factors such as the Glazers. Now, a lot of the things that he has personally done that United fans disagree with is now coming into question. So, yeah, he's under pressure. I do feel like if he has two really bad results, then there's a potential for him to go, innit? And I definitely feel like if he doesn't get sacked after the Anfield game, I don't know who they're playing after that, but a loss in the game after the Liverpool one, I feel like that's it. It's
first,
over.
Yeah, first. I feel like it will. I think he'll get through it. Because I feel like he's going to do decent against Bayern. Like, I think he might get a draw.
Yeah, but the thing is, even if they draw that, though, they don't go through, innit?
No, they don't go through.
So they get knocked out.
But, like, the mood around the club isn't as bad.
Winning that game and getting knocked out does not change the mood, in my opinion, bro. I'll be honest.
I think it would. Because United fans' level has dropped a lot. Their expectations is on the floor.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say. So why would you celebrate beating Bayern but getting knocked out?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I think my final point was discussing Hojlund, 70 mil signing. Yeah, it's coming. Zero goals. We're almost at Christmas time. Yeah. And I understand. I get these guys are saying, cool, Hojlund isn't getting the service. I keep hearing, yeah. But when Ronaldo wasn't getting the service, I wasn't hearing these excuses.
Mm.
Yeah. And he'd scored goals already, by the way. And Ten Hag was saying he needs to prove that he can score a goal. Why is it not the same for my man? Martial's come in the team, yeah, and he bagged last week against Everton.
Yeah,
so there's so clearly, like, even if you don't get service,
McTominay's getting goals.
Yeah, but again, even if you don't get service, there's still, like, you still can't justify zero goals in 12 games. No service does not equal that.
Yeah, no,
it might equal two or three, but it doesn't equal zero.
Yeah.
And no assists as well. So I saw yesterday, cool, Dalot 100% he should have squared the ball to him, yeah, and then Bournemouth have gone down the other end and scored a second goal. I understand that. But it still does not mean zero goals, yeah. And he has to improve. You can't keep putting it down to that. And again, if you're going to put it down to no chances, give Ronaldo that same energy. Because when he left, that's exactly what happened. You guys were blaming him for not scoring when it was no service as well. So be consistent.
No, Højlund does need to do better, man. It's not looking too good at the moment. But I like.
Do you think it's concerning?
I like his energy and I like his commitment.
Do you think it's concerning?
Yeah, it's concerning. He hasn't scored.
Do you think longer term he's still the guy?
He's very young. But I feel like the problem with Højlund is he had 9 career goals when they went and bought him
for
70
mil. Bro, people acting like someone's signed like a Vlahovic now, yeah. And he comes to this league and he struggles. At least you can say, you know what, in Italy he was bagging. You know what I'm saying? Højlund bagged 9 goals. So how do you know this ain't just him?
It might just be him.
He might just be that guy.
That's what I'm saying. That's why when they bought him for 72 odd mil, I was thinking.
And they say the Champions League goals, like, yeah, cool, he scored 5 Champions League goals or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Sebastian Haller, I think he was, like, the top scorer in the Champions League, bro. He's not prolific. You get it? It happens sometimes. Do you know what I mean? So we need to think of the worst case scenario as well.
I don't know what they're doing, honestly. He's got a good profile and everything like that. And he applies himself and he tries hard. But I don't know what United are doing there, man. I honestly feel like, and that's the thing, they put a lot of pressure on the boy now. They put him in for 72 million. They don't have another striker.
Yeah.
He's going to have to try and do it. But like you said, it's like, it might just be him. 9 career goals overall. This might be his level. And if that is the case, United are in trouble again. They've wasted money again.
You go throughout the team that was playing at the weekend, yeah. Like, Maguire played. McTominay played. Martial played, yeah. That's three players that these men were actively trying to sell. That's like Arsenal playing like Cedric and them, man. Like, consistently. That doesn't make sense, bro. It doesn't make sense. If you're trying to put a style in place, you were trying to get rid of them. Now, come on, man.
Ten Hag doesn't know what he's doing, man. United, we see you next week, man. We see you next week. All right, man. That's the Rondo for you guys, man. Big love to all. Like, subscribe, and all of that stuff.